Hi guys, it's Keaton here for the Casthetic Podcast. I want to remind you to please use the Amazon banner link at the top of our website at casthetic.com for all of your online shopping needs. It costs you nothing extra, and the show gets a percentage of all the sales. Please bookmark it. And now, on to the show. Welcome to another episode of Casthetic. I am your host, Keaton Buse, and we got royalty here for you guys today. It's a regal episode. We got the band Fuzz Queen on, and you guys are going to love them. I know you are because I love them, and that's a good indication. If you're listening to the show, you care about my opinion, maybe. But anyways, great band, great music. Here's their first song. It's Willing Girl.
These girls won't smile, these girls won't purr. Why don't these girls know what you deserve? And these girls won't smile, these girls won't moan. How dare these girls leave you all alone? Wanna be a cub, won't need to look your face, won't need to teach these girls.
Yeah.
Welcome back. That song was Willing Girl by Fuzz Queen. I know you guys enjoyed it, so we're going to get past the pleasantries and get to know the band behind the song. So why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves around so the listeners out there know your voice?
I guess I'll go first. My name is Chris Stello, and on the songs that you're going to hear, I do occasionally vocals, but mostly I'm playing guitar.
Since we're royalty, are we supposed to use the royal we?
We are, as you see fit.
We are Aaron Frisbee. No, I'm Aaron Frisbee. I play guitar and keys and sing for Fuzz Queen.
I'm Clinton, and I play bass.
My name's Ben Tufts, and I play drums and sing.
Now, how did Fuzz Queen come together? Was there a coronation ceremony? did flocks of doves and trumpets play?
You know, it's not very exciting. These things always happen through, like, lineage and marriage.
It was a shotgun wedding, actually. We got Ben pregnant, and at that point, it was pretty
much... With a shotgun.
Yeah. Pretty much at that point, it was like, we either become a band or we end up in a ditch face down.
It was buckshot, you're having octuplets. This is a horrible line of conversation. So there is a real story to how we came together. Ben and Chris and I used to be in a band called Miss Siobhan and You Murray, which started out as a duo that Chris and I were in. We decided to leave our lives in Chicago behind and go on tour as a duo, and then we started working with Ben after touring for about a year. And so we toured together for several years, and as we worked together, our music grew into something completely different, a really full band sound that was so different that we decided that we needed to call it something completely different and sort of move on from what we'd been doing in the past.
The name change was long overdue. Ben's contributions have been more than just, you know, showing up and playing the drums. He sings, he helps us write, he writes songs on his own. He's definitely long deserving of a place in the lineup. And when we were just called Miss Siobhan and You Murray, which were me and Aaron's stage names, it felt like he was being left out.
Yeah, and Miss Siobhan and You Murray and that other guy on drums.com was already taken, believe it or not. Somebody had already squatted it. So.
And Clinton's recently joined us since we, Chris and I just moved from California back to D.C. to play more, and Clinton's been kind enough to join us on bass, which has been really wonderful.
How'd you end up getting hooked up with these guys?
I've
can blame Elvis Costello.
Don't we always?
Yeah, I was in this Elvis Costello... tribute band, let's call it. Me and my friends are obsessed with that guy. And after our drummer left, I ran into Ben actually at, where was it, Barco, I believe.
Yeah, we were, our bands, their band and my band at the time, one of my bands at the time, were both rehearsing at a rehearsal studio. And I had been bringing them so much business that the owner had just given me a key so that he didn't have to worry about letting me in. And they had shown up and forgotten to arrange to get a key. And so... they were kind of like out front, like freaking out. And I walked up and just, I was like, hey guys, like, do you have a key? Yeah. And then I asked them what they were doing. And they said, oh, we're an Elvis Costello tribute band. Now, Elvis Costello happens to be one of my favorite songwriters ever. So I said, really? You need a drummer? And I think I actually only ever played one show with him.
Just one. Yeah.
But
that's
all
we needed.
As soon as I had an opportunity to bring Clinton on to a project, we actually played, and Clinton still plays with a band called Lowercase Letters.
Who are really fantastic.
Yeah. Really great band. But I miss playing with Clinton, and when Chris and Aaron moved to this side of the country, I knew we needed to recruit somebody, so it's been a really good fit.
Yeah, it's been
excellent.
Great.
Your bass tones are awesome.
Oh, thanks.
It sounded, I mean, everyone sounds awesome. That first song that was played, Willing Girl, is there a story behind that song?
It's not a shiny story.
No, it's not a nice story, but it's a true story. I started writing that song after the shooting in Santa Barbara that involved a shooter who...
This was a couple years ago.
Yeah, left behind basically a manifesto declaring that the reason for his rage was that women were not giving themselves to him in the way that he felt he deserved. And he killed several people based on those feelings of deservedness and entitlement.
Well, and what really sparked the need to write the song was not so much the tragic events that surrounded this guy's rampage. It was the
comments that followed it.
The outpouring of support for him afterwards from, you know, I mean, as these things go on the internet, there people say things when it's, you know, under the veil of anonymity. But, you know, the outpouring of support under, like, you know, basically, you know, well, yeah, fellas, this is what happens when, you know, when ladies don't give you any. So ladies, you know, you need to just think about it the next time you turn a guy down. He might go out and kill somebody next time. You know, it's like there were a lot of comments like that. And it was so just absolutely horrifying to read that, like, I you know.
It was horrifying that there were that many people out there who both felt so disconnected that they thought that that was an okay thing to say, that somehow to take some sort of internal frustration and blame women as a whole for one man's violent acts was something that they wanted to identify themselves with. And so it's a response to that.
It's a fitting response when you hear the lyrics of your song. It made a great song.
Thanks. It's an interesting, I don't know. I try not to think about categorizing certain people as like bad people. I think that anyone can kind of slip into those feelings. I've talked to people who seemed on the verge of slipping into those feelings, and I've talked to people who have said that they used to feel that way and have changed their opinions. And I think that that's kind of the thrust of the song, is to pull people into more of a contemplative way of thinking about what they might be thinking about on a personal level, and taking that to like, wait, is this societally okay? How am I thinking about this in context of other people and how it might affect other people?
So what's your songwriting style like? Do you guys have one person that predominantly writes the songs and then brings it to the group, or do you just jam out till you have something?
Oh, we're so all over the place with that. It depends on the song.
Yeah, you know, so where we started out, Aaron had some songs and I had some songs that didn't really fit in either of the bands that we were playing in back when we lived in Chicago. And so we would say, hey, let's do something else with this. And the majority of the material that we had was either, you know, like 90% me or 90% her. And once we started working with Ben, Ben at first kind of stepped in as like sort of an arranger and would be like, well, why don't we just try to cut this part down here and maybe add some here. But as things have gone on, you know, as I said before, Ben's become like sort of a songwriter in his own right. But yeah, as far as our process, man, just about any kind of way that you can get to a song being finished, we've done it and keep that sort of like in our toolbox.
You know, yeah, I think the key is like keeping it open so that it's always a safe space for anyone to bring an idea in, but then also to keep your own mind open so that we can like
songwriting space.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean there's no one thing. I guess what our craft isn't so precisely focused or finely honed that we can just be like, oh, well, this is how we do it.
It's very rare. I think a lot of bands say like, oh, everyone checks their ego at the door when it comes to writing. It's near impossible, but it's also really important to try to do.
All right. Well, we got a segment on the show called Five Questions. Ask you guys five questions. I ask everybody. So here it is. Cue the music. It's time for five questions. All right, the first one, the worst gig you ever had.
There are probably multiple answers to this, because the one that immediately jumps to my mind is one that we did as a duo. That was in New York, and
it's
we got there.
At a venue whose name shall not be mentioned, pianos.
We got there, and they had us set up upstairs, and then somebody came in and was like, oh no, there's a burlesque show up here, so you have to set up downstairs. So we went down there, and then these other bands showed up, and nobody realized that we were supposed to be on the bill, and we told the bartender.
The other bands were already set up.
Yeah.
And the manager goes, hey, there's been a booking screw up. There's a four band bill or a three band bill down here, but we're about to add another band. So all of you guys who are already set up and ready to play, you're gonna have to cut your set short so that we can add this other act. And we
so of course everybody's like looking at us, everybody like, at you us. Horrible people. But this is after the bartender was on the phone with the booker, like, I have this band here, and he was like, because apparently this was. something that had happened before. So the last band to play was called Beowulf, and we were supposed to play first. We were supposed to open the show, and we got pushed through every single slot because somebody's manager would complain. So then they'd be like, "Hey guys, now you're gonna play second. Now you're gonna play third. Now you're gonna play after Beowulf." And we were like, "Okay, cool. This is probably gonna be like black metal or something like that."
Because at this point, the music had been all over the place. It had been like an indie pop band, and then this guy who thought he was Roy Orbison, but it was actually kind of more like Pat Boone. Anyway, not that we're bitter.
Beowulf was a performance of Beowulf in its entirety. And at this point, we had friends who had come to see us, and they had bought us like shots because we were just like, "This is so ridiculous. Like, let's drink tequila." And my sister tried to offer some shots to the other bands, and they just like really blew her off and were really rude to her. So we were laughing about that and drinking more shots. And so we got pushed all the way to the end, and then the sound guy started cleaning everything up. And I was a little tipsy. I was a little in my Beowulf cups and walked up and I was like, "Hey, we're supposed to play. And like one of my friends is still here." And so I just took my amp up on stage and started playing by myself.
And yeah, at this point it was like 2 a.m. and the only people left with the
staff. All I remember from Beowulf is somebody saying, "Horses and swords, horses and swords."
Yeah, one of the main characters in the Beowulf performance was supposed to be drinking while he was acting,
and he was drinking.
Actually drinking. He just had like a flask,
like a goblet
size. No, it was a bottle of Jim Beam actually, and it's just it was
very
just,
period
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, totally, and was just pulling from that the entire time. And you could tell by 10 minutes in, his bloodshot eyes, and he was slurring his words. And you're like, "Wow, that's method acting, Keitel. Great."
The next question is the worst equipment malfunction you've had during a performance.
Nothing's blown up.
Yeah.
I mean, with us, because we play on the road a lot, we often tend to have, you'd like to hope that like little things that break, like patch cables or hi-hat clutches
guitar
or whatever.
Slides.
Just little things
guitar
like that. You would
slides.
Think that they would all kind of stagger their failures.
But if this ever happens to you, you just ask the touring band to borrow theirs.
Yeah. No, you would think that the equipment failures would be staggered, but they're not. They're kind of like, they're cowards. They sort of like, they all kind of like wait and gather like a pack, and then they all jump out and attack you at once. So usually what happens with us is a lot of little things break within the course of like one or two shows. And we had that happen, I think, a couple of years ago. It was like in 2014, we were touring through the Northern Midwest where like it was Aaron's rig in particular, like one thing after another would just go bad.
Every
it would
show.
Be like a patch cable or a power supply.
Well,
something
we'd have
like
to
that.
Figure out what it was.
Usually on stage,
you got to unplug like every single thing and like figure out what it is. But for me, the worst was we were on tour 1 year and we were driving to Philly from Baltimore and we got rear-ended in the van, and the girl who rear-ended us, and of course our van is huge. It's this big Sprinter van. And this girl was driving
a Dodge Neon
that she had literally just driven off of the lot, and it was her first car, and she was driving back
19.
To New Jersey. And
she'd been saving. I mean, the story was like,
it was so sad. Crushing. And her car was totaled. Her airbags went out. Like we ended up giving her like a Band-Aid because she had like cut herself, and like all waiting on the side of the road. And it worked out and everything, and she was fine and we were fine. She had to call her parents and tell them that she wasn't going to be driving her brand new car home because she had just like rear-ended someone. But after that, we were on tour for several months, and I like pulled a muscle in my neck, and so there were a couple shows where we had to arrange the set so I wasn't singing that much, and there were a couple shows where I lost my voice, and that was really weird and scary to me.
Yeah,
as far as like equipment malfunctions, like when the equipment in
equipment.
Your body
well, the
runs
muscles,
out.
The muscles
weird.
On your neck, you know, like they're all interconnected, and so the one in the back would pull like the one in the front, and like the one
yeah.
like, and it would just end up straining your vocal cords. Yeah. That's the technical. That's actually the medical term for it. The one in the back and the one in the front. I dropped out 6 months short of my internship, and now I play music.
The next question is the dirtiest or scariest place you've stayed during a tour.
Oh.
Oh well, this is good because I feel like for me this is gonna. Well, there was one that was scary that was like heroin addicts, and we had to leave. But I want to tell the one about where we got our dog Arrow.
That's a great story.
Yes.
We so we played in Bisbee, Arizona, and we were on our way to some gigs in California. And Ben was like, oh, let's stop and see my friends in Phoenix. We were like, oh, let's do that. That'll be really fun. So we stopped and we had
amazing
tacos.
Amazing taco joint in Mesa, Arizona called Backyard Tacos.
Yeah. We had a really good time. And then we were like, Mesa. It was super. We usually sleep in our van, but it was really hot. And we decided to get a hotel. So we were like, oh, what towns are in between? And Chris was like, oh, well, Tonopah, Arizona is in between. Well, there's nothing.
Yeah,
in Tonopah.
When you're heading through the Mojave on the 10, like once you get past Phoenix, there's until you get to Needles in California, there's nothing. It's just all
It's desert. All I mean, the desert's there, but
some reservations.
Yeah, but like not a lot of places to really stop and stay. So he called and he like actually paid for a room over the phone, and they said, okay, like, you know, we'll be here. And so
they might not have said that, but it was
it was implied.
I gave him the credit card number and he grunted acknowledgement.
He might have just been passing out. So we show up and it's this like horrible, just like in the middle of nowhere next to like, what's there, like a nuclear power plant?
There's a nuclear power plant and there's like a COA, like an RV park.
Yeah. So we get there.
That's it.
And we like go into the office and there's like no one there. It's like borderline kind of feels abandoned.
Felt like I was in a David Lynch movie.
I called the number, no one answered, rang the door, the bell a bunch.
There was
a house attached to it.
We like knocked on that door. So we see that there's a light on in one room and we're just kind of like, I don't know. At this point, it's so hot and we can't sleep, but like, what are we going to do? So we were just like, well, let's just drink a beer in the parking lot and then we'll just sleep with the doors open on the van.
Because ain't nobody coming along.
So
here.
Chris was like, I need to go relieve myself.
Need to go water the desert. Drive around back. I was like, I'm gonna water the desert. And as soon as I got out of the, van to take a leak, I see these two pointy ears poke up from behind the bush and start barking at me. There's nothing out there. Can't see anything. I was just like, oh, crap! Open desert, wild dogs. So I jump back into the van. I'm like, guys, wild dogs. We gotta
coyotes.
Go.
Yeah. So then we realized it was a puppy on a tether. So we're like, oh, that's really sad. And then about that time, these two drunk guys stumble out of one of the rooms. One of them's like a heavyset older guy, and one of them
We didn't meet him until the next day.
Okay. Well, anyway, they let us in, and the hotel was terrible. And the next morning, we got up and realized other guy was a guy with a homemade eye patch that was made out of wood paneling, like would be in like a basement from the 70s.
Yeah.
And like long stringy hair. And I went to play with a dog, and she was, like, really sweet, and she was on this, like, 10-15-foot tether and underweight.
And there was a little shelter they had built, and they were it looked like they were feeding her and giving her water,
but
obviously
she couldn't run
neglecting
or anything.
Her.
And so I was playing with her, and all of a sudden, the eye patch guy just appeared behind me, and he was like, do you want her? We don't want her. So I was like, oh! So I walked back, and I'm like, guys, you have to come play with this dog. So we did, and we actually decided we were going to take her, but we couldn't because it was really hot, and we didn't want to take her and leave her in the van for our other gigs. So we played like two more gigs, so about a year ago.
Almost,
and on Chris's
exactly
birthday,
a year ago.
We drove back, and we got her, and I think the guys were really surprised. And we've since driven past that motel with her because she's been an awesome tour dog, and we've like pointed out the window and said, Arrow, if you're bad. We actually saw Eye Patch Guy like sitting on like a parking bumper thing smoking.
Rolling
a cigarette,
and I think he had a glint of recognition when the van drove by.
The closest you've come to quitting music.
Can I get all existential here?
Yeah.
I don't know if this qualifies as existential, especially when you're out on the road. You have good days and bad days, and like you have to power through the bad days a lot because it's it can get very depressing sometimes really quickly. And I feel like some people are cut out for living on the road and playing on the road. I mean, I can't speak from experience as far as like living on a tour bus. You know, most people think of that as like, you know, it's still very like lavish accommodations. But I feel like even for bands who have, you know, who have hit that level of like touring and tour support and, you know, have, you know, fans that will come out to see them, I feel like living on the road is still kind of like it's uncertainty that some people just aren't wired to deal with. And most days I like to think that I'm wired to deal with it. But, you know, any long tour we've been out for a couple of months, there are some times where you're just like, I don't know why I'm doing this.
Yeah, you have those weird, what am I doing with my life moments.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's there's highs and lows, but I can't think. I can't think of a moment that I've ever wanted to do anything else.
Yeah.
I've worked a lot of other jobs where I've made good money, and then I decided to do this job where I work twice as much and make almost no money at it, and I still would rather do this.
I think that any time I've ever, and I haven't really ever talked about this, but I feel like people don't really talk about mental health and like self-care that much, and we probably should. But really the only times I've ever thought about quitting music have been simultaneously with feeling suicidal. Like that would be the way to be quitting, would be just not to be around anymore. So I guess as far as thinking of like quitting and living some other life, that doesn't really like, it's not something I've thought about.
All right. The last question is, what's your best memory together as a band?
Every single show is so good.
Yeah. Hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I have a couple favorite moments. I mean, I think getting together, as tumultuous in a way as getting together for a few weeks last January to write this album that we're about to release in parts, was really special for me because I had never just hung out for 3 weeks just to make music. I mean, music is everything I do, but I teach, I play cover gigs, I play in other bands, and to just focus on one project for 3 weeks and just have really no other reason to exist and no outside distractions for 3 weeks was really special.
I think actually, like right after we did the kind of epic living together recording, which we clearly liked because we like moved in together here in DC after that, like we were on tour after that and we had sort of a traumatic happening where we had a person who was playing bass with us who decided to leave at the beginning of the tour, like in the tour, and we didn't really know if we were going to be able to pull off playing the rest of our tour, which was already booked and involved like a charity event and some other shows that were really important to us. But what was really cool to me was like doing it anyway was a huge bonding experience, and I felt really great about that tour. We ended up like doing this crazy hike that was really long. It was, how many miles was this hike?
It was like 17.
It was in Colorado.
Yeah.
We decided to do this huge hike like in the closer to the end of the tour, and
super high elevation.
We ended up playing with a couple different people and just like the sort of like fly by the seat of your pants and sort of like make it work made us feel really like tight and good, and made this like this move feel like kind of the right thing to do.
I totally was going to bring that up if you didn't.
All right, well, let's get some more music going for you guys. This next song is called Sailing Empty Tonight. It's so good. It's got this really sweet build up. You get, just listen to it. So here it is. It's Sailing Empty Tonight.
Very, very bad man. So I am made
Welcome back. That song you just heard was Sailing Empty Tonight, and it's time to promote some shit. Let you know about the hip happenings in and around the town, what's coming out, what's going on. You guys got any albums coming out or any shows coming up?
An EP that we Ben kind of mentioned, it's the first half of what we worked on about a year and a half ago, that's going to be coming out on October 22nd. And there's going to be a show at 16th Street House as part of Fuzz Factory Presents on that date, October 22nd. There'll be a Facebook event for it. It's a house show, so it's suggested donation. You can find the event and we'll send you the address. It's going to be with Caustic Casanova and with Free Children of Earth. And before that, we've got a show on October 17th at Galaxy Hut. That is also going to be a really cool show, a completely different show. We're going to play, probably bring back some stuff that we used to play with Mishavon and Yuma Ray for that show, just to really make it a special experience separate from the other show, which is going to be a pretty loud rock show.
Give everyone a reason to come to both shows, yeah, in the span of a week.
And Galaxy Hut's really fun. Last time we did coloring sheets when we were there, and this time I'm going to, I think, put together some different one night only games for that Galaxy Hut show. And then the October 22nd show is going to be sort of a multimedia experience. There should be an art show at that and food. Possibly we're going to have a wine tasting and possibly, hopefully, have tarot cards as well.
All right, well, I got a few shows to tell you guys about. First off, open mics. Go to them when you can. They are great way to experience local music in your area in ways that you don't hear it at shows.
You hear
people coming up, just starting out. You hear people playing their own versions of other people's songs. It's open mics, I can't stress it enough, are just the foundation of live music, and you should go to them.
Sometimes you hear a Peruvian guy with goat toenails as percussion.
Yeah, sometimes there's some weird shit. Sometimes there's shit you don't like, but you listen to it and you appreciate it no matter what. Two open mics that I really like that I think more people should go to is every Tuesday night over at Philadelphia Tavern in Old Town Manassas, hosted by a great couple guys, Ricky, Matt, I think Tori just hosted. All great musicians. Check them out if you can. Another open mic every Thursday night at Epicure Cafe in Fairfax. Amazing.
Woo, Epicure.
And the pizza is awesome.
We love Epicure.
Yeah, Epicure's beautiful. As far as shows go, coming up, we got the Daycare Swindlers, the Pie Tasters, and Risk Ray on November 5th at Fat Tuesdays in Warrenton. At Epicure Cafe on October 15th, Bunny Man Bridge, Dry Town, and Janked are playing. Then October 25th at Songbird Cafe, Somnia, Amandax, and DiCaprio are playing. And at Fat Tuesdays in Fairfax, I'm really going to mispronounce this name, so I'm sorry ahead of time. Afarnish, Blindfoot, and Stereo Riots are playing. Those are going to be awesome shows. Check them out. You can find them on Facebook. Look up any one of those bands. They'll have a link to it. You know how the internet works if you're listening to this. There's one last song that... This song's so awesome! I just want Space Battles. And, like, a Moon Dragon to
Who
shoot lasers
that?
To this song. Like, it's so epic. Is there a story behind the epicness?
Yeah, Strange Bird is... I actually wrote the lyrics a really long time ago. I grew up right outside of New Orleans, and I was living in Chicago when Katrina hit, and I wrote this song after seeing a lot of the footage of Katrina and how it was being portrayed and what was happening to people, and just feeling kind of like horrible and desperate and disconnected from that. And then the format of it is based on an ancient form of poetry that's Persian called a ghazal, where you have movable lines that end up repeating themselves but in different positions in the song, and it has to come back to the first line by the end. So you have to like make it make sense as you're moving these lines through, which is a little bit of a difficult thing to do, but to me it's kind of a magical, it creates this really wonderful rhythm of its own that's gets away from the sort of like A-B-A-B thing that we're used to.
And before we wrap up here, I just wanted to give a big thank you to Mark Ryder and Ken Barnum for recording, mixing, and making everything so... Oh!
That's the word for it.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't express it. And a really big thank you to Bias Studios for hosting us. Check them out online at biasstudios.com. highly recommend it. Like, if there's anything musical you want to do, they can do it.
If you haven't seen the space, it's really gorgeous. It's amazing.
These rooms are amazing. Set up the way that they're set up and the equipment here is it's formidable. And yeah, you can get some good sounds out of this room.
Thank you, Bias. Be sure to follow everybody on Facebook. And you guys got the Twitter and the Instagram, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah.
We've got all of that.
Yeah. Friendster.
Although, yeah.
MySpace. AOL keyword with your parents' permission.
You have to use the CD-ROM, though, in order to access it that way.
Yeah, that's 1,000 free hours they're giving out.
No, man, it's crazy. How are they going to make any money?
You use 10 hours a day, that's 100 days of free internet.
Yeah. That's an incredible deal.
It is. That's just at a bin in front of Walmart.
Gosh, there has to be a better way.
So here it is for all you listening. It's the last song of the episode. I'll be back with you in a couple weeks with more music. Here it is. It's Strange Bird by Fuzz Queen.
doesn't live here.